Good morning and welcome to Raven's Eye Radio here on CKCU in 93.1. Today we have a few special guests in the studio with us. We have, first of all, Chaplain from Carleton, Roman Catholic Chaplain, Father Tim McCauley.
Thanks for having me on the show, Jason.
No problem. I forgot your name already. Did you want to introduce yourself as well?
Oh, my name's Andrea Mrozek, and I blog at prowomanprolife.org.
Okay. And Giselle, do you want to introduce yourself?
I am Giselle. I'm just a PhD student at Carleton and a friend of Jason's.
Well, that works. And, of course, me, your host, Jason G. So today we're going to be talking about legislation that is currently trying to be pushed through Canadian Parliament on what defines a life. It's something that Harper has been trying to put through for quite a while. And now he's got the opportunity with a majority conservative caucus. And there's a lot of, on the pro-choice side of it, the issue comes up with, if you redefine what a life is, what does that mean for women and the right to choose whether or not to have an abortion, and the right to life side of it. Is sort of happy with the idea of redefining what a life is, because then it could mean revisiting the idea of abortion and whether or not it is moral or legally, should be more legally allowed. So I think the best way to start this off is to just sort of get everybody's views on the topic right now in terms of what defines a life and where you stand on the abortion debate. And I'm specifically interested in hearing about your opinion on as someone who is pro-woman and pro-life, what that means for you specifically. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Also, should I start?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, definitely.
One small thing, as a pro-lifer here, I think it's important just to get the facts straight. And as a pro-lifer, Prime Minister Stephen Harper, I don't think he has any desire or intention to reintroduce the abortion debate. So what MP Stephen Woodworth has put forward is his own bill, or his own, actually it's a motion. So what a motion is, it's non-binding, it's not legislation. Mm-hmm. In short, this is a bit of a way for a parliamentarian to put forward a discussion, and that's exactly what he's done, and it creates a debate and people can talk about it. So as for my views as a pro-woman, pro-lifer, and that's my site, and that is my positioning, I don't see the fetus or the child, whatever you are calling it, as being in opposition to the mother. So the woman is just as important, and her beliefs and her choices are just as important to me. I don't think that those have to run contrary to those of the developing fetus, aka a child. So my point, my positioning is that we should be speaking about this debate using the maximum freedom of speech, not using euphemisms, and really examining what it is that happens when a woman gets pregnant, and the fact that there isn't really an undo button on that. And so it is my opinion that the most empowering position is one that supports women in carrying the pregnancy through to term, understanding that that is her child, not necessarily that she needs to mother or parent, but that she has become a mother, and that that is something that is of value as well, and the two complement one another. So I'll stop there and let the others jump in.
Okay. And Father McCauley?
Again, thanks for having me on the show, Jason. I'm glad this came up in the news so that you would propose this debate.
Well, let's be clear. It's not a debate. It's just a discussion. I don't want us to get into fisticuffs. It's too close quarters.
Discussion, yes. Well, obviously, I believe in the Christian and Catholic position that the child is a human being from the moment of conception. We would defend that not only based on Bible and tradition, but scientifically and philosophically, that genetically we know it's a distinct person from the moment of conception. And we can discuss that more, but that's my basic point of view. And, of course, the Church wants to support pregnant mothers, and I think as a society we need to do more to help these women in crisis. And men who are fathers of these children have a huge responsibility. Again, we can talk more about that, but as a society we're all implicated, and we need to do more to help these women, but the innocent children should not suffer by being murdered.
Giselle, do you want to talk a little bit about your position on the issue?
Sure. First, I just want to say I think there's actually going to be a lot of agreement in terms of certain issues. So, for example, I think
just pushing a bit closer here.
We've all mentioned already the importance of providing supports for pregnant women and potentially future mothers. But I think what we can't forget to address is a woman's right to choose. Not every woman is going to embrace the idea of motherhood, regardless of what circumstances led to the pregnancy, and a lot of the times it's not under her control that the pregnancy occurred, and so we also have to think of what that means for her health. And if the baby, like, I don't see, for example, Andrea, why your position is contrary to the idea of pro-choice. I mean, pro-choice doesn't necessarily mean opting for abortion right away. It's just the idea of allowing a woman to choose and take control over her body. So
I think that's my website says Canada without abortion by choice, and where I differ from the classic pro-choice, pro-life argument is because I'm not actually interested in legislation. And I think that that is a deviation from the really critical issue of having young women, hopefully not at a crisis point, because a crisis point is a really bad time to be faced with, what do I think about this? What's my decision-making process going to look like? How am I coping? But at a non-crisis moment in her life, I want women to be considering, what is growing inside you? What happened? What is this thing called motherhood? And understanding that I don't believe that there is an undo button. I don't believe that abortion, and this is where I would very much differ. I'm sure we can have a discussion on this, but I don't believe abortion is ever a solution. Terminates a pregnancy, women go forward, they carry forward some of the hurt and the pain from that termination. Some of the difficulties that you have in an unexpected pregnancy are not going to be solved when you go through with an abortion. And so I think that understanding, and this idea, that phrase, I said in my first opening comments, I want to have the maximum freedom of speech. And that means not using phrases like the right to choose. The right to choose what? And that's the question I want to plant in the listeners' minds. What are you choosing, and what is it that's growing inside a woman who gets pregnant? And there I am, purist pro-life. There are all kinds of really difficult situations that women face. I know some of my friends personally have faced some of those difficult situations, and I have a heart filled with compassion for that, but I just don't see abortion as the solution.
Personally, for me, I'm male. I'm never going to have to go through the physicality or the mental pain of an abortion. So in my opinion, my own sort of view on this, whether I'm pro-choice or pro-life, is inconsequential, because it really, to me, comes down to what women want and to the right of the woman. And you say your group is pro-women, pro-life, but in my opinion, the idea of freedom of choice to me is the freedom for a woman to choose what she does with her own life and with her own body. Period. No domination by anybody else, whether it's based on a culture or a law or religion or anything like that. A woman is her own person, and mistakes or not, she is allowed to do whatever she chooses with her own body. That to me is what a pro-choice person is. That to me is why I am pro-choice. It is because it gives women the freedom to do what they want with their own lives and their own bodies.
If I can add to that, I also want to note, I don't think anybody's ever suggested that abortion is a way of undoing or solving all problems. I mean, I think I agree with you in that I think every woman should really deeply consider what it would mean for them to make that kind of decision, and to think ahead of time where they do lie and what, you know, as best as they can, what they foresee the best course of action is. It's never a solution, but it's a way of, again, maintaining that control. I mean, abortion can be very difficult for people who go that route.
She's fine. Don't worry. We can hear her. Yeah.
But so can having birth and, putting a child up for adoption, you know? So, I mean, this is, again, I think it's very much a personal choice. And, I mean, it's great that you've made your own. And that's, you know, that's, I think, what every woman has to do. But I think it's very important to recognize the autonomy of every woman to be able to do that. And more, you know, what we should be moving towards is providing the necessary resources so that women are educated in terms of what is available and what they can do so that they can make that choice for themselves, free of judgment.
I could jump in there. Now, we agree that everyone needs to be better educated, but on this issue of choice, freedom, and autonomy, John Paul II makes a good point in his letter, The Gospel of Life, that he wrote, I think, in 95, of the notion of freedom in our culture is one of absolute autonomy, losing the sense of relations with others. It comes to the point where we guard our freedom so much that other people even become a threat to us. And he mentions how women teach us by example of receiving the other person. And he writes that women first learn and then teach others that human relations are authentic if they are open to accepting the other person. So maybe we need to explore a bit in our culture, not this freedom as absolute autonomy, but a freedom that is part of interpersonal relations as well.
No, and I don't think autonomy should ever be seen as being in opposition to human relationships. And I think one of the key factors that will inform women in terms of the personal choice they may pursue is their social networks and the quality of their relationships and what's again, how that plays into the experience.
I was just going to jump in quickly. On the idea of autonomy, I don't think that if you have autonomy, you necessarily separate yourself out from everybody around you. I mean, in the book, in the passage you just read us, he says the idea of autonomy takes us away from others because it's when we become free, we almost become selfish, if that's what I'm getting. Sort of from what he's saying. Am I correct in that sort of...
The extreme of freedom as absolute autonomy.
As an absolute autonomy. Well, but that's another thing is let's just briefly off topic for a second. Let's go back 12 years to when it wasn't, you know, allowed for gays to legally be married, right? That's an autonomous freedom. That is a freedom for them to choose who they want to marry. And it essentially is not who they choose to fall in love with. It's them being allowed to fall in love with whoever they want and then marry whoever they want. And that to me is also part of autonomy that is actually helping us love others better than it is taking away from the love of others.
I just wanted to jump in and say that on the autonomy question, I do agree with Father Tim. I think that we've made that into a, not just that it would be the concept of absolute freedom, but that would be the greatest societal good, that we have raised that up to the greatest societal good. So on a philosophical, I'll let all the philosophy students debate whether they think that's actually true or not, to ask that question of whether it is. But I'd also like to highlight that here on the ground, we have one of the most extreme situations in modern day Canada with regards to abortion. And if you look back in Planned Parenthood literature and you go back a couple of decades, Planned Parenthood itself, at the outset, in the initial stages, they didn't support abortion either. And they had these great ads that that showed, for example, a woman getting pregnant. And in the picture, you see the woman's stomach getting bigger. And then the guy standing across from her, his is getting bigger too. And I forget, they'll have to forgive me if I get this wrong, but when you get pregnant, he does too. The concept being that this is a baby. And so when we think about women and mothering and all those feelings and emotions that come into that, I really think it's important for students today, for me today, for everyone to consider just how extreme we've traveled down this road in Canada, where the questions that we're asking weren't even options to some of our abortion advocates 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So really, when we opened up abortion and it became this, you know, a choice just like any other choice, we fail to recognize what exactly we are doing, not just to the fetus who dies, but also to the mother who is then put in this position of having to choose that she should kill her own child or not. And that's why when boyfriends stand up and say, I'm just going to let her do her own thing, that's not what women in a crisis need to hear. There's got to be something more strong. There's got to be something stronger to give to women than you just do your own thing and I'll be there for you, baby, kind of thing. I don't think that is my idea of support.
Well, as a male boyfriend, I feel that, you know what, as much as if I were ever in a position...
Male boyfriend and a father, if you are...
Potential father,
yeah.
In that sense. If I were to ever to get somebody pregnant, whether it be my girlfriend or whoever, and it got to a point where they were unsure of what to do, anyone who can consider themselves a man would sit back and say, oh, hey, do whatever you want and I'll just be there for you. A real man would talk with a woman about her options and how she's feeling and what she wants to do, and perhaps suggest some options to her. That's what I would do. In any scenario, if I was presented with that, I would have to be there to talk through her. But in the end, she's the one who has to carry the child for 9 months. She's the one who has to go through the emotional turmoil of the end result of her decision. She is the one who has to deal with the vitamin supplements every day and any potential problems that go wrong with any pregnancy that can happen at any time. And in that sense, I can be a moral support all I want. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, it is up to her to decide. On your point of autonomy and the Planned Parenthood ad that you spoke about, the whole idea behind Planned Parenthood isn't about abortion. They have become an abortion advocate, but less than 2% of what they do is actually abortion treatment, therapy, or even referrals to doctors.
That's true in Canada, but that's not true in the States.
It's even lower in the States, actually. Mm-hmm. In the States, it's less than 1%, and I can get you facts and figures if you'd like.
Well, yeah, I'd like to see those, because I was under the impression that they actually have a larger chunk, something in the 30% range, and that actually is, I have these facts and figures, that abortion is their moneymaker. The rest of the services they provide, they do that for sure, whether it be breast cancer testing, birth control, et cetera, but when it comes to how they make their money, it's abortion.
Well, I don't understand how one can make money on abortion when you're referring them to doctors who perform it.
Well, that's in the States. Cancer's
right,
different because we have socialized medicine.
I understand that. But again, Planned Parenthood is a non-profit organization. So a lot of what they get comes in from donations as well. And Planned Parenthood is there to help young parents, new parents, people dealing with unwanted pregnancies, on how to properly deal with these scenarios. And they do talk through other suggestions, adoption, parenthood. They provide contraceptives, which is another thing that, if we want to go down to the States, contraception is a bad word down there. Contraceptive is a bad word to Benedict the 16th. You know, it's either abstinence or nothing. But if you look at the facts and figures, in Texas, they are the third highest state in the union for teen pregnancies, because they have in their schools abstinence only programming. So if abstinence is quote unquote the only option, then why is it that it's not working?
Well, I don't really think that when we look at those studies showing abstinence doesn't work, we're looking at this in a really, like, in a climate where it has been, they've had a certain approach to sex ed, and abstinence education was brought in as something, this would be under, the Bush administration, so relatively new. So you have this pattern of...
In Texas, it was under Governor Perry, where
okay.
It was switched to abstinence only.
I was speaking
only.
Presidentially.
Oh, no, and so, presidentially, it's the states that are up to determining their own curriculums.
Right, but he was the president in charge at a time when abstinence education became quite more common and more popular.
There was a push because of him in office,
yeah.
Yes.
So, but you had years and years and years leading up to that point before abstinence education ever came in, and you saw in that lead up period, you had basically a catastrophic situation of lots of teen pregnancies. You have a cultural climate in which you already have this problem. So it is a deviation from the discussion today to talk about abstinence education versus other forms of sex education in Texas when we're talking at Carleton University today.
No, fair enough.
But I think that what I'm talking about is a cultural climate where you have obviously lots of unplanned pregnancies happening. And in that context and in that climate, what are we telling our young people today, men and women, about girls and boys in many cases, these are young people getting pregnant. What are we telling them about what that's going to, how does that set them up for their future if they have an abortion versus give the child up for adoption versus raise the child? And just a little bit on the choice rhetoric, it's very seductive to say we're giving all these options and you can choose. But I know myself. I know myself when I'm 35 now. I know myself when I was 25, and I know myself as a teenager. And there's no way in hell that I was going to be making this long-term decision to have a baby as a teenager. And now, as a 35-year-old, I look back, and again, this is deeply personal, but if you're 35 and you have no children, your viewpoint is 180 degrees different from being a teenager who possibly might abort the one child they ever have the opportunity of bringing to life. I guess I'm saying that it is very, very difficult. And when you present and place all these options on a teen's shoulders, I think we know what they're going to choose. And that, to me, is a form of soft coercion and one that does no justice to a long-term vision of choosing to do something that is really, really hard, that will, in the end, strengthen you to the core of your being, because hard things do make us who we are. They make us tougher. They make us stronger. And I think that I think it does a grave disservice to place that on as a burden on basically a young person's shoulders to say, you've got all these choices, when in effect that is a little bit of a soft coercion towards choosing one thing.
I'm just going to jump in quickly and then I'll let the rest of you discuss, because you said something, you touched on something there that I found really interesting. You said that we have this the idea of what are we teaching our children if we allow for if we have this pro-choice rhetoric and we make it sound flowery and sweet that it's all about, it's your choice, you can do
it. Pretty easy.
Well, but the thing is, what aren't we teaching our children? What are we missing out on in schools or at home that we are afraid to talk to our kids about that is leading to these epidemics of teen pregnancy? What is going on in our society today that we're not telling our kids that they think that it's okay to go out and get pregnant and they don't know about contraceptives and they don't know about birth control or their parents don't want them to be on them? It doesn't matter if your parents want you on them or not, you're going to go around and do it.
I would challenge you to consider that every teen knows about contraception.
There I don't
is,
think that's...
You really, truly, honestly, I'm a lot older than you, and even in my day, I was learning how to put condoms on a banana and talk about birth control pill, and even in my day, I'm not that old. But I honestly have a hard time believing that we have.
But that's the thing, is in high school, going through my
no
high school, being, of all things, a public high school, and even going through a Roman Catholic school up till grade 8, not once was... sex or sexuality mentioned. It was about family and the father and the mother and their roles within religion. And then in high school, where they should have been teaching contraceptive methods, where they should have been teaching about birth control, about how to properly put on a condom, our gym teacher was extremely religious and didn't feel that we needed to learn that. So for our health classes, we watched one movie from 1950 about the terror of AIDS, and that was it. So it comes down to the individual curriculums of these teachers and whether or not they're following along with what should be done. Now, the other thing is, if we're not teaching them properly, then we have a bunch of kids out there running around who don't know how to take care of children, who don't know what the rest of their life is going to be like. And is that really the types of people that we want raising children?
Again, I'll let Father Tim jump in, but I'm not saying anybody at a teenage, adoption really truly is an option. And
I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying it's not.
And I think it empowers the woman as well.
I can make a comment about, contraception and the link with abortion, the sense of a anti-child mentality, and talking about sex ed. Well, I remember being grade 8 in New Brunswick and learning about sex ed, and it was all clinical and scientific, as if we human beings are only animals. And I wish I had learned more about the dignity of the human person, created in the image of God, or even if you're not a believer, the dignity we have as human beings, and the beauty of marriage, and the reason why, if you really love someone, you might want to wait for marriage. So I received nothing like that in my sexual education, and we've been discussing a little bit about the importance of educating young people. So why not teach them about the beauty of marriage and children, and we could re-educate our society that way.
But don't you think that if it comes down to a personal belief, like that of a god, or a belief about habits sexually and your worth as a person, why is that put on the schools in that sense? Why isn't that about the parents? Why aren't the parents instilling those values in their children?
Agreed. That's the primary duty of the parents, is to educate their children, not the schools.
Right.
Okay. I just had a couple of comments. First, you mentioned, Andrea, before about not placing the burden of choice on teenagers. And yes, it's a very big and difficult decision for somebody.
I hope I didn't use those exact words, but go ahead.
I think you did. And I just want to point out that having a teen pregnancy is probably a worse experience than having to think about and make those kinds of...
Why do you say that?
What teen is prepared to take care of another life?
See, because I know there's a book called Promises I Can Keep, and it's about women in inner cities, girls actually, teenagers, and they are happy to have these children. they get pregnant out of wedlock. It speaks to the idea of education and whether you, if a girl actually, this is actually, let, just don't get upset about the abortion question for a minute, because these are questions of girls who are choosing to get pregnant, to have their kids, and that's what they, that's where they derive their value. So I just want to challenge your notion on why it would be, yes, it would be very, very hard to bear a child and give it up for adoption, but why that would be somehow more or less empowering than having an abortion.
The point is, we can't make that choice for women in that position or teenagers in that position.
So then you are putting that on that on a child, basically.
On a teenager who is, I think, way more capable to address some of these issues than we might think. And on the other note, and again, why the emphasis, I think, should be on education and what options are available. And as a way of anecdotal evidence, if I may, I mean, I went to Catholic schools my entire life, including a Catholic college. And the education we received in my high school was abstinence-based and, you know, spoke of... you know, waiting for the right person and all that sort of thing, which, yeah, is appreciated, but there wasn't the converse side of it. There wasn't a lot of education surrounding contraceptives, so I would argue not every teen is well-informed. And I mean, I know this is just my high school's experience, but they also had the highest pregnancy rate in the municipality. And in terms of my, you know, the college I went to, ours was the only college that did not make condoms readily available during Frosh Week, which is notorious for a lot of sexual activity. And so what are we really saying in terms of safety and again, providing the necessary resources and education for people to make informed decisions?
This is an ongoing debate of, okay, do women have the information, the education, the support they need? And I think as a whole society, we're all implicated, we're all responsible. So I would invite us to, why can't we teach young men to be real men who are faithful to their girlfriends, who are wanting to be husbands of these women, make them their wives? Why can't we just promote a better culture where we want to defend unborn children, but we want to defend the dignity of women? We want to call men to be responsible fathers? We would solve a lot of problems if we would work together to build up the family again.
I think a lot of the male issue on this side comes from the generation gap a lot of the times. I mean, you have, I'm not talking about, you know, family personally, but I know a lot of families out there who, their fathers are very traditional. It's, they go to work and the mother stays home and the mother does what the father tells her to do, because that is a very Christian, very biblical perspective on what a marriage is. Marriage is simply a property agreement. And a lot of the times, and so when it comes down to being a man, I mean, there's this Chris Rock bit about how, you know, guys will brag about, I take care of my kids. Well, don't brag about it, just do it. It's what you're supposed to do. That's what defines you as a man. And you're right. You're absolutely right. We need to start talking to men as well about what it means to be a father. Because as much as we say the choice is on women, if a woman chooses to have a kid and doesn't choose to go through with an abortion, well, now the dad has to step into the picture and step up. And legally, at least in Canada, I know it's a lot more difficult to get fathers to do that. And in the States, it's difficult too. There's no real protection in the law for women in that sense. In terms of, if I have a kid with someone, they have the baby, I can, you know, go and do whatever I want to do, and they can't really do anything about it. You know, and then they're left with a child that they can't raise on their own, or it's difficult for them to raise on their own. And yeah, it takes two to tango here, but when one of the tango partners can walk away, then I think we have to give an advantage to women in that sense. And that's where, in my mind, the idea of choice comes along.
This idea, I just want to return to the choice rhetoric here, because it really is rhetoric. I think everybody considering that choice ought to be able to watch one happening and take a look at it and get the full information. I really don't believe there's anything empowering for women about killing the fetus. And that's why the choice rhetoric, as placed alongside other completely, like we would have points of agreement in this room, I can sense it for sure. But placing, to me, that choice alongside some completely neutral, truly, choices it's just, to me, so devious, and it really does harm to women, and naturally, of course, to their children, who won't be born. And then by extension, I think it does harm because the man can't step up and be part of something. He's disincluded. He's not involved. He's not allowed to be. Father Tim can speak better, I'm sure, than I can to the nature of what it takes to form strong communities. And I think that what irks me is I've had the opportunity a bunch of times to counsel young women and stepped in and tried to convince them with everything in me not to have an abortion, and they went ahead and did it, and that in spite of the fact that we had lined up people financially to care, even adoption, possible adoptive parents, we had support networks galore, and that's the kind of thing I want to be able to do. But then it comes down, an abortion, it seems so quick and it seems so easy, and they go and they do that, and we don't even have a chance to build community in this society. I don't even get the chance to help. I sometimes have met women and they ask for initial advice, but it comes down to it, abortion seems easy.
That's all the time we have for today for this very intriguing discussion on the pro-choice, pro-life debate in Canada. I've been your host, Jason G. Tune in next week for the second half, another 24 full minutes discussion back and forth with our guests. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you tune in again next week.